Welcome back to Pastor Rick's Daily Hope. Hey, if you're brand new with us, we're glad that you found us. Every day we're going to dive into Rick's teachings, and today we're continuing the series called How God Meets Your Deepest Needs. Now, in this series, Rick explores how the different Hebrew names of God that are found in the Bible actually illustrate the special ways that God cares for us. His constant presence, His purpose for your life, and His preparation for a place for you in heaven. Okay, here's Pastor Rick with part one of a message called The Path to Personal Peace.
Now, if you believe the internet, peace of mind is big business in America. Everybody thinks they have the key to it. Yesterday, I typed in the phrase peace of mind into an internet search engine. And it was interesting to see what the top 10 responses were on the internet, and I'm not making these up. Number one was peace of mind products. Number two was a peace of mind home security system. Number three was peace of mind funeral services. Number four was a reggae band called Peace of Mind. The fifth thing on the internet was peace of mind candles, crystals, and body soaps. And then number six was a company selling cancer insurance. Number seven was a company that sells home inspections that takes the guesswork out of buying a home. That'll give you peace of mind. Number eight, this was unusual, a plumbing warranty plan that insures your toilet. I know you've all been very anxious about that. Number nine was a hypnosis therapy clinic. And number 10 was a Baptist church in Texas. Everybody thinks they've got the key to peace of mind, or at least wants you to think so, so you'll buy their product. I saw an ad for a perfume the other day called Peace Perfume, and the title said, "Wear it to feel serenity." Now, folks, if we're all that easy, it'd be great. Just dab a little perfume on and you feel, you know, you have peace of mind. Peace of mind is such an important concept in life that people will do almost anything to find it. They will travel to exotic places at great expense. They will sniff a brain-destroying drug up their nose. They will experiment with New Age rituals. They will try all kinds of things. But the truth is, very few people in this world are at peace with themselves. Would you agree with that? Most people carry a high degree of stress, of anxiety, of tension in their lives. As a pastor, I have noticed that there are three things that tend to rob our peace. You might write these down. Three things that steal the peace of mind that God intends for us to have. Number one is when circumstances are uncontrollable, we often lose our peace. Now, as you know, much of life is beyond your control. You get frustrated by, you know, delayed flights and stuck in traffic, and there's nothing you can do about it. You just sit there. But even more than that, the most important things in life are often beyond your control. I've met with couples who wanted to have a baby, and it just wasn't happening. I've met with singles who wanted to get married, and it just wasn't happening. And lots of things just end up being out of your control. And when that happens, we get frustrated, and we lose our peace of mind. Number two, when people are unchangeable, we tend to lose our peace. People naturally resist change. Have you figured that out? And they resent it when you try to change them. In fact, have you ever tried to change anybody? Some of you maybe had a little personal improvement program for your husband or your wife or your children. And, you know, they just don't cooperate. And you can't figure out, well, why aren't you, well, you know, working on this? I mean, it's for your own good. And they resist it and they resent you. The quickest way to lose your peace of mind is try to change somebody else, because most people are just not going to change. And so we get frustrated and lose our peace. The third thing is when problems are unexplainable. When problems are unexplainable. Now, we know that life is not fair. We know that not everybody has a happy ending. They don't all live happily ever after. And things don't always turn out right. What makes it more difficult is you're not always going to know why. And when you don't know why things don't happen in your life the way you intend for them to do, you tend to get frustrated. You tend to get anxious or nervous or stressed. And you lose your peace. Now, God has promised peace of mind because it's a fundamental need of your life. In fact, one of the Hebrew names of God, We've been looking at these names of God for the past several weeks and how they meet our deepest needs. One of the Hebrew names for God is Jehovah Shalom. Now, you know this word, Shalom, it means peace. And it means, Jehovah Shalom means, I am the God of peace. The most used greeting in the New Testament between Christians is grace and peace. We are to live peaceful lives. Jesus says three times in John 20, peace be with you, peace be with you, peace be with you. And in John 14, 27, he says this, there on your outline, I am leaving you with a gift, peace of mind and heart. And the peace I give isn't fragile like the peace the world gives. So don't be troubled or afraid. Now, if God says, I'm offering you a gift of peace, he means it. It's not something you work for. It's not something you deserve. It's not something you try for. You don't beg for peace. You don't plead for peace. It is simply a gift. Then why don't I have it? Today, we're going to talk about that. We're going to look at the path to personal peace. And you're going to hear a dramatic story that will illustrate the principles of how to live at peace, no matter what's happening in your life. Now, I need to say right up front that peace has nothing to do with problem-free living. If you have to wait until all your problems are solved to be at peace, you're never going to be at peace. Because Jesus said, in the world, you will have problems. You're going to have tribulation. Just count on it. Peace of mind does not come from conflict-free living. Much of your life, you're going to have conflict. But did you know that you can have peace of mind in the conflict? Yes, you can. Peace of mind is the result of three important decisions that you need to make. Three choices. And when you choose these things, it will produce peace in your life. It is the choice for acceptance, the choice for trust, and the choice for surrender. Let's look at them today. The first step in the path to personal peace is to accept what cannot be changed. Accept what cannot be changed. Worrying about what cannot be changed certainly won't give you peace. Becoming resentful or bitter about what cannot be changed will certainly not give you peace. Feeling guilty about things that cannot be changed will not give you peace. So you can stop beating yourself over the head. Having self-pity over things that cannot be changed in your life will not give you peace. There is only one thing that will bring peace in your life, and that is acceptance. Acceptance of what cannot be changed. In the Bible, in the book of 2 Samuel chapter 12, there's the story of King David, who had a young baby that was dying. And David did everything he could to keep that baby from dying. And he even went and he prayed in the temple for 7 days, all night long. He fasted, he wept, he cried, he pleaded with God, God, please save this baby. And on the 7th day, the baby died. God did not answer his prayer. I don't know why. Someday we'll learn why he did not answer that prayer. But God had a plan and purpose in it. Now, when David's advisors heard this, they were scared to death. They thought, this guy's nearly over the edge with the baby near death. When he finds out that the child has actually died, he just may lose it all. So they were afraid to tell him. But David heard them whispering, and he said, has the child died? They said, yes. And David got up, he went and took a bath, he put on clean clothes, he ate a big meal, and he went back to work. And the advisors were astounded. They said, what are you doing? You were in agony when it was near death. Now that it's died, you're okay. What's happening? He said, the child has gone to heaven. And one day I will die, and I will be reunited and go to heaven with that child. In the meantime, there's nothing else I can do. I got to get back to work. He had accepted what could not be changed. Last week, we looked at the Apostle Paul and how he was taken to Rome, put in prison, and was awaiting execution by Nero. And during that time, he wrote Philippians, the most positive book in the Bible. And we looked at how Paul says, I've learned to be content in everything. I want to go back to that verse there on your outline, Philippians 4, 11 to 13. Paul says this, I have learned to be satisfied with the things I have and with everything that happens. Would you circle that? Everything that happens. I know how to live when I'm poor, and I know how to live when I have plenty. I have learned the secret of being happy at any time, in everything. I can do all things through Christ because he gives me strength. Now notice several things. First, acceptance is a learned experience, and you learn it from going through tough times, learning to accept it in the experience. It is a choice, and it is only possible by supernatural power. You're never going to learn to really accept the things of life without God's power, Christ's power in your life. Now let me tell you, what's the one thing that keeps you from peace and circumstances? What keeps you tense and nervous and stressed out about the things in your life? It's your demand for an explanation. Your demand for an explanation. When something goes wrong in your life, when something doesn't happen the way you think it ought to happen, you go, why? Why, God? Why is this happening? Why did you allow this? Why is this happening to me? And by going over and over and over in your mind, trying to figure out why something happened, you are kept in turmoil. Now, let me just say two or three things about your demand for an explanation of the things that happen in your life. Number one, God doesn't owe you an explanation for anything. He's not obligated to explain everything that he does to you. You are the creation. He is the creator. God is a good God. He is a just God. He is a fair God. He is a loving God. And he understands things that you don't. And you need to just say, okay. The fact is, God doesn't owe you an explanation for anything in your life. Number two, even if he did explain why things happened the way they do, you probably wouldn't understand it. God's mind is so much greater than your mind. You can't comprehend all of the ways of God. There are forces at work in your life, in your family, in our world, and throughout history that if God sat down and took the time to explain to you how generations affect generations, and on and on and on, you probably wouldn't understand it anyway, even if you did get it. The third reason why it's not that big a deal is because explanations never bring peace anyway. You think, well, if I just know why this happened, well, then it'll make sense. No, it won't. No, it won't. Some of you have figured out why certain things happened in your life and you could figure it out. Did that bring peace to you? No, it did not. You still felt resentful or bitter or angry or upset or sad or whatever. Because explanations never satisfy. What comforts us is the presence of God in our life, not God's explanations, God's care and concern and comfort. So stop looking for something that you really don't need. Now, the classic example of accepting things that cannot be changed is the story of Job. Now, you know this story. In the Old Testament, Job played in the Super Bowl of suffering. I mean, you know, this guy was the wealthiest man who ever lived. He was a very godly man, very dedicated, very devout to God. And one day, actually in a 48-hour period, he lost everything. First, all 10 of his kids were murdered. That's enough. Then he lost all of his wealth. His crops were destroyed. His flocks and herds were destroyed. He went bankrupt instantly. He lost everything he had overnight. And then if that weren't enough, he got a terrible, painful disease that left open sores on his body oozing and left him in pain 24 hours a day. Now, you think you had a rough day. That's pretty tough. The only thing he was left with was a wife who nagged him. And she comes to Job and says, hey, Job, why don't you just curse God and die? Now, that's what I call emotional support. But the most difficult thing about Job's circumstance was this. There was no apparent explanation given. He had no reason why all these things had befallen him. There was no understanding, no hint, no God saying, now this is why I'm doing this, why I'm allowing this in your life. Looking back, we can see what was going on because as we read the book of Job, we find out that there were forces at work, that God was allowing a test, that Satan was involved. There were all kinds of things going on that Job didn't understand. We can see that looking back, but he had no idea in the moment what was happening. It didn't make sense. And the most difficult part of it was this. Job says, why is this happening to me, God? I'm a good guy. I'm a good guy. And for 37 chapters, God says nothing. Zip. Have you ever been in a crisis when God was silent? That is one of the most difficult things to handle in life. When you're going, why? Why is this? And heaven is like brass heaven, and your prayers are bouncing off the ceiling, and nothing is coming through. Job was going through the greatest test of his life. It was a test of his peace of mind, but it was also a test of his character. This is the guy who had said, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. And it was a major test. Now, here's the point of the story. When God is silent, you need acceptance. Do you remember when you were in school and you took a class? The teacher is always silent when the test is being given. And you can count on that in your life. God's not going to give you the answer in the test. You might get it later. You might not ever get it until you get to heaven. But you're certainly not going to get it in the test. Now, you know, millions of people pray the serenity prayer every day. You're all familiar with this. I put it there on your outline. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. That is a prayer, a very famous prayer by a man named Reinhold Niebuhr. But did you know that it is edited? That there are 8 more lines to the serenity prayer that you may have never even heard? And did you know that that's where all the power is? The power of peace is not in the first part of the prayer. It's in the part that they've cut out. Let me read you the entire serenity prayer. It says this, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Now, that's the part we all know about. Here's the rest of the prayer. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship, there's that word, accepting hardship as the pathway to peace, taking, as Jesus did, this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it, trusting that you, God, will make all things right if I surrender to your will, so that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with you forever in the next. Amen. Makes a little bit difference, doesn't it? All of the power is in the second part of the prayer. It's through the acceptance, it's through the trust, it's through the surrender that you find the path to peace. So here's what you do. When you go through an experience you don't like, you do what you can, but then you accept what can't be changed. If you got a health problem, you got a handicap, you got a difficulty, you go to the best doctors you can find and you get work on it. But once you've hit the wall and nothing else can be done, you accept what cannot be changed. If you got a problem with a child, you try to work with that child and you do the best you can and you get the best experience and advice, whatever you can. But once you've hit the wall and there's nothing more can be done, you accept what cannot be changed. If you are in a marriage that just isn't working out, you do the best you can in bringing some resolution. But you accept that person whether they ever change or not. God says this is the starting point to peace, accepting what can't be changed. Now, the second choice in the path to peace is to trust. It is to trust in God's loving care. Trust in God's loving care. Read with me Isaiah 26, verse 3. You, Lord, give true peace to those who depend on you because they trust in you. God gives peace to those who trust in him because they depend on him. Now look at the next verse, Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and don't lean on your own understanding. Don't try to figure it all out. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths. Now, as I said earlier, you will never live a problem-free life. There is no such thing as a problem-free life because it's always something. Isn't that true? Is it true? It's always something. And if it isn't one thing, it's another. Okay, you're familiar with this. You have a list of problems in your life. 1, 2, 3, 4. The moment you knock off your biggest problem, guess what? Number two gets promoted. And now you have another number one problem. You get that one knocked off, guess what? Number three moved up to two, and it's now number one. And the rest of your life, you're going to have one problem after another. There is a word for a series of problems. It's called L-I-F-E. It's life. And that's all, and you got to learn to have peace in the middle of your problems or you're never going to have peace. Because as soon as one pops up and you deal with it, another one's going to pop up in its place. You say, why does that happen? Why is my life just one problem after another? Well, there are three reasons. In the first place, Adam choked. Okay? He blew it. And he and Eve gave in to temptation, allowed sin to come into the world, and we're all paying the result. We live in a fallen world. And so this is not a perfect world. There are things around you that cause problems because we live in an imperfect world. Number two, you have an enemy, and his name is Satan. You say, Rick, you believe in a personal, real devil? Of course I do. Jesus, God does. The Bible talks about him, and all you have to do is pick up a newspaper and see his work all around the world. Evil is a real entity in this world. And Satan wants to mess you up. He wants to mess with your mind. He wants to mess with your family. He wants to mess with your health. He wants to mess with your finances. He wants to mess you up, particularly if you are a follower of Christ, because if you're trying to do the right thing, you're the enemy of the devil. So he's going to try to mess you up anyway. So you got the world competing against you, a fallen world. You got a personal enemy who's competing against you. And then on top of that, you just make your own mistakes. You blow it. Most of the problems and pain in my life are from my own poor decisions, from my own lousy choices. When I make dumb decisions, I pay the penalty. And when I sin, there are always results. So most of the time, the devil doesn't even have to worry about me because I'm messing up my own life. And so those things are always working to bring problems into your life, and pain comes as a result. But, listen to this, but sometimes the pain in your life is no one's fault. Sometimes the problems in your life, you can't blame anybody for. One day Jesus was walking down the street and he found a man who was born blind. He was blind from birth. The disciples looked at the man and said to Jesus, okay, Lord, who sinned, this man or his parents? Implying that he had this problem because of sin. Jesus, and by the way, that's a common therapy today, isn't it? It's either your fault or your parents' fault. I mean, that idea is still around, isn't it? Okay? It's either blame yourself or blame your parents. That's the reason for every problem in your life. Well, that's not a new idea, by the way. And when they asked Jesus, whose fault was it? Jesus said, neither. It's neither the man's fault nor the parents' fault. He said, in John 9, quote, he says, this happened so that the work of God may be displayed in his life. Sometimes there's a problem in your life so that the work of God may be displayed in your life. Now, regardless of why you have the problem that you have that's unsolvable, unchangeable, unexplainable, uncontrollable, regardless of the problem, regardless of the source, whether the call came from the world, the devil, yourself, or you don't know where, you still need the same response every time. And what is it? It is to trust in the loving care of God.
What a fantastic message from Pastor Rick. You know, Daily Hope is changing lives every day. Here's Pastor Rick with a letter from one of our listeners.
Today I want to share with you Jody's story. And if you've been struggling in your marriage, I'm certain that her story will give you hope. She writes, Pastor Rick, I want to sincerely thank you for your messages. It's been about 2 years when I began listening to your messages, and I haven't missed one since. I filed for divorce 2 years ago, and I was searching for the Lord's guidance in my life, and there was very troubling times going on within my marriage and so much confusion. But I found so much wisdom and peace through your teaching. You taught a message about how God sees us, and I felt very unseen in my marriage for years. But thank you for sharing that with your listeners. I've since used that with my testimony with several women. In times that I feel unseen, I feel the Lord whisper in my ear, "I see you. I see you." Something so simple changed my life. I dropped the divorce papers, and the Lord softened not only my heart, but my husband's as well. We've now been married for 9 years when it could have ended at 7. The Lord used you to save my marriage, and God put me in order. And when my husband saw what the Lord was doing in my life, he gave his life to the Lord almost exactly 1 year after the initial divorce papers were filed. We have such grateful hearts for one another now, and that's such a miracle from our wonderful Lord Jesus Christ. I now have a group of 7 women that listen to you every day as well. Your messages are easy for me to share with people who are searching in their lives. Thank you for bringing so much hope to so many lost people. I pray the Lord's blessing on you and your family. You certainly have blessed mine. God bless you, Jody. Well, Jody, I'm so, so glad that your marriage has been saved, that you stuck it out, and that you're husband have come to faith in Christ. What an amazing testimony. And I'm so glad that you're sharing daily hope with a group of women. And for everybody else, I want to just say, who are you sharing daily hope with? Are you sharing it with a group of men? Are you sharing it with a group of women? Sharing it with a group of students at school? God does do miracles when we trust his promises. So who can you share God's changing word with today? It may be your spouse, it may be a child, maybe a friend, maybe a neighbor. God is in the business of changing lives. Let him use you to change somebody's life today. God bless you.
You know, a great way to share the good news of Jesus is to share the Daily Hope messages with people who need to hear them. Just go to PastorRick.com, click on the Listen tab. There you'll find buttons where you can share the message by email, social media, or WhatsApp. That's PastorRick.com. We hope you'll join us next time when we look into God's Word for our daily hope. This program is sponsored by Pastor Rick's Daily Hope and your generous financial support.